1770 at Lake Tuskegee. You're listening to CBNR, the sound of the lakes.
Sunny days at cbc.ca. Dear Paul, that's our address and that's my name. Paul Moth here with your vacation postcards to sunny days and nights. They came in dribs and drabs and then canvas sacks. Finally, the Canada Post Cube vans pulled up to our door. Your emails clogged our server and cooked our RAM. But we've sifted the mill from the floss, and here's the best, or actually a more or less random selection, of your missives and communiques. Welcome, ye of the Hundred Lakes and all lands beyond, where my words fall on the ears of Canadian summer. You know, when I took this job a few weeks back, I had no idea of the popularity of the show. We have been inundated with an outpouring of queries, comments, propositions, sweet nothings, and recipes from listeners around the Hundred Lakes and across the country. Today, we make good on all your requests to répondez, s'il vous plaît. Joining me to help out with this task, my producer, technician, chauffeurs, and head of PR on sunny days and nights, Julie Secord. Yo, Julie.
Hey, Paul.
You've worked on this show for a couple of years now.
It's my third summer.
How does our mail volume compare to years past?
Our former host Frank Day had a huge local following, of course. He'd done the show for 25 years, so we always had tons of mail from listeners in the lakes. I guess I wasn't expecting so much feedback from the rest of Canada.
I have something of a profile on the national airwaves.
Yeah. I think, though, that Canadians are just in that summer space, and that's what the Hundred Lakes are all about.
Hear, hear. So let's go to the old mailbag and get right to it.
Our first letter is from Lionel Ham of Penthaven, who writes, "Nothing personal, but I can't stand this new guy, Paul. The thing that most irritates me is the way he keeps mispronouncing local names, place names especially, and
That's two demerits for you, Nan.
Oh, God. Our first letter is from Lionel Ham of Penthaven, who writes, "Nothing personal, but I can't stand this new guy, Paul. The thing that most irritates me is the way he keeps mispronouncing local names, place names especially, and extra especially, Craxton. When he says Craxton Mills, it gives me the jumps. Frank Day was a great host. We all miss him." Rough stuff there.
Well, in this business, you learn to roll with the punches. Many more important people than Lionel Ham have said worse. Jack Valenti actually once called me a blight on the entertainment industry. So, Craxton.
See, there it is.
Craxton. Craxton. That's it, isn't it?
Mm-mm. Craxton.
Craxton.
No.
I'm saying it right, Craxton.
No, listen. Craxton.
Now you're being willfully obstinate.
Cracks like cracks.
Cracks.
Stun.
Stun. Cracks. Stun.
No, it's something when you put them together.
Craxton.
No. Craxton.
Well, I don't hear any difference.
Craxton.
Craxton.
Sorry, Paul.
I guess I'm just deaf to the accent up here. Listen. Craxton.
Oh, no. It's getting worse. Stop all your head.
Craxton. 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 Craxton, Craxton, Craxton. Craxton Mills.
Next letter.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Is there a problem?
Ramona Hennings of Craxton.
That's the best yet.
Ramona writes, "Last week, we were up at Two Mile Lake. I took the kids up there for a swim. We were just tulling off..." You have to read this one. Modesty prevents me from continuing.
Okay. "We were just toweling off and unpacking our picnic when this large raccoon came out of the bushes. It was the middle of the day, so I thought this was strange. It became very aggressive and went for the food in the basket. It tore at some tubs and containers for a few minutes and then began to hiss and spit at me and the kids. I figured it must have been rabbit or something. We started back toward our car in the parking lot, and the raccoon came after us. I was terrified. I must have screamed for help because your new host, Paul, came straight to the rescue. Wow, Paul.
Yeah, I was up there last weekend for a dip. Yep.
He was so brave. He jumped right back into his car and drove it over the raccoon, back and forth a few times until the raccoon was good and dead.
I've got this terrible smell in the car now. Thank God for rentals.
Oh, hold on. Here's the best part. I want to nominate Paul Moss for greatest Canadian.
Well, flattered though I am, Ramona Hennings, and I should add, you are not the first to put forward my name.
You've had a previous nomination.
Yes, and let me tell you what I told Mom. If nominated, I will not stand. If elected, I will not serve. Besides being patently absurd in its own right, I mean, whose measure of greatness, etc., etc., and a crass audience grab. Well, check that last bit. I keep forgetting, you know, that I'm working for the CBC. Besides being patently undeterminable, what nation would want for their most lauded, most elevated, most emblematic citizen someone who's better than they are? I mean, I would want a human being, not an angel, not a paragon, but a man or woman, flesh and blood, who isn't always great, who's sometimes not so great, even shoddy, unreliable.
You're thinking of Frank Day.
Well, myself, actually, but Frank better fits the bill. Here's a guy who is beloved by an audience, a community, for 25 years, who was, by all accounts, if not great, a great guy.
You hear those very words all the time.
Indeed. And this is a guy who was also a flim-flam man.
Allegedly a flim-flam man.
Yeah. What better credentials for greatest Canadian, eh?
Only in Canada.
Pity.
Harold Beck of Rituxit writes, I was listening to the show the other day, and the new host wondered if a field of corn caught fire, would the corn pop?
I did wonder that.
Good popping corn has a high water content. It is the expansion of water trapped inside the kernel that causes the popping.
I think I knew that.
Mr. Beck continues, therefore, most popping corn is grown outside the dry conditions of the so-called Corn Belt, and coincidentally, the rather moist conditions in the area directly west of Lake Tuskegee make it ideal. Popping corn has been grown there for as long as I can remember, and in 1948 there was quite a big fire, and the corn did, in fact, pop.
And we have some tape?
Yes, this is Jasper Hockley reporting for CBNR from August 23rd, 1948.
This is Jasper Hockley reporting for CBNR. This great blaze is said to have started in the burn of Vernon Needles outside Cheapham. High winds have carried it down the Murraydale Canyon, and it is now moving quickly through the cornfields here on the outskirts of Butterton. There is a... Well, in the dark, it's hard to make out the, against the great amber curtain that is the advancing fire. It's ash or, it looks like snow from my vantage point. Well, sir, if you can believe it, the corn in these fields has commenced to popping. There's a vast wave of it now, moving ahead of the fire across the fields towards us. Oh, it's a high wall of popcorn. I'm only guessing from here that it must be, Oh, heavens, there's a lot of popcorn there. I think we'd better get back to the truck now and... Oh, dear God, the popcorn! No!
There you have it. Jasper Hockley reporting on the Great Butterton Popcorn Fire of 1948. Pretty dramatic stuff.
He won all kinds of awards for that.
Posthumously?
Not funny.
You're listening to The Sounds of Summer on CBNR. Part of the Trans-Canada Network of CBC Radio.
A few things...
No, you take this. Julie,
okay.
Take it away.
A few things to report in our county almanac this week. The Vintage Air Show is going ahead at Riverstead tomorrow, starting at 11 a.m. Highlight of this year's Skyfest is the Ride of the Blimps, a daring display of dirigibles, the likes of which has not been seen since Super Bowl IV.
I think I'm going to try and take that in. And I love those old Fokkers and the gypsy moths, of course. They give me such a warm, fuzzy feeling whenever I see them. Nostalgia for stuff, I don't know, that I've seen on TV or something. You know, Snoopy and the Red Baron, the Enola Gay.
We also have a bear advisory for the Lake Tuskegee area. Residents are warned to dispense quickly and thoroughly with their garbage and to avoid leaving food out in kitchen or dining areas.
That's some concern.
This is a determined bear, Paul. It's breaking into homes and especially cottages. The summer crowd tends to be less careful about that sort of thing.
Now, bears are like what? Bears are like herbivores, right? They don't eat like fish or fruit or anything? No.
I think they're omnivores.
Oh, good, yeah. That's a relief.
Well, that's all we have in the almanac.
All right, back to the mail then. Wait, omnivore, that's like what? Eats anything, right?
Dear Paul, on an earlier show, you mentioned you had lived under an assumed identity to avoid prosecution at one point in your life. I'm interested in finding out more about this. My concerns revolve around crossing borders, cashing checks, booking motel rooms, car rentals, that sort of thing. Are there any hints you can give? And that's signed Jack Smythe of no return address here.
Well, that's a good start.
Words of wisdom, Paul.
Well, Jack, the first thing, do not phone home, E.T. If even one person knows where you are, everybody knows. You have to cut all ties. Your money should be cash. You need a good paper man. And you hear about people who get their fingerprints burned off, but it just ends up a mess.
Ouch.
Yes, ouch indeed. Plastic surgery is a possibility, but good work is always costly. I had this friend who was bargain hunting, but I'm telling you, he woke up in agony in a clinic in Guadalajara, his money all gone. His face looked essentially the same, but messier. Only thing was, he'd moved into a D cup.
Okay. Hope that helps.
Yes. Buena suerte, Jack. You're listening to Sunny Days and Nights on CBNR. My name is Paul Moth. Today, my producer Julie Secord and I are reading your letters. Here's a letter from Saskatchewan, land of the... What is Saskatchewan the land of, Julie?
Asbestos? Uranium?
Seems we don't know what Saskatchewan is the land of.
We'll make one up and we'll call it whatever you like.
Okay, how about the land of the living skies? Spooky UFO type stuff.
Sounds good to me.
And this letter comes from Molinosa.
It's from Emil Mumby. And Emil writes, Dear Paul, you're from Newfoundland, right?
Righter than rain, Emil.
Say something in Newfoundlandese for us. Everybody out here in Saskatchewan wants to hear something authentic from a Newfie. Mm. I love your show. You're doing a pretty good job filling in for Frank Sunny Day, though I never heard the show when he did it. Yours truly, Emil Mumby.
Emil, I really appreciate your writing, but I'm afraid I find your request utterly offensive. The whole stereotype of Newfoundlanders as being goofy or rough-hewn, spouting homespun platitudes in a bewitching and beguiling accent, it's all bullroar. Nobody kisses a cod back home. Nobody drinks screech. There are multitudes of dialects and accents, none of which is stupid or goofy, and I will not perform in blackface for a national audience.
Oh, come on, Paul.
What?
Don't be a stick in the mud.
Julia, I can't believe I'm hearing you properly.
Oh, say something in Newfoundlandese. Off air, you're proud of it, and you don't sound like this when we're not in front of the microphones. You have a real Newfie accent.
Do not.
Come on, bye.
All right, all right.
Yay.
I can't.
Paul!
I feel like a chimp.
Oh, go on.
All right, all right, all right. Is this a Wade Graham or what?
That's not a Newfie expression.
It's peculiar to the east end of St. John's. That's the capital.
I know. All right. How about a letter from Newfoundland, then?
Good.
It's from Budge Doyle in Pouch Cove.
Yeah, Pooch Cove.
Oh, you know him.
What? You think just because I'm from Newfoundland, I know everybody there?
Well, no, but...
Yeah, I know.
It reads, Dear Paul, that Julie, what do she do? well, I'm not exactly sure what his question is.
He's inquiring as to, your vocation, your interest in this business, say, your professional background.
Oh, okay. Well, Budge... In Pouch Cove, Newfoundland.
Pooch Cove,
Newfoundland. I'm working here in the summers on this show and a couple of others at CBNR, and in the fall I go back to finish up my degree in journalism at Ryerson. And that's in Toronto.
Well, thanks for the geographical clarification. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, I meant to mention to you earlier, if they need a guest lecturer, you know, sort of an on-air, behind-the-mic, theory and practice of radio broadcasting kind of thing, now that you know me, seeing what I can do,
I mean, I would, of course, but...
What?
Well, I'm just a student.
Oh, great. Get the Student Society or whatever to bring me in.
Well, I'm sure by now that whatever guest lecture scheduled they have would, you know, be settled already.
Seriously. Fine. Not interested. No.
Oh, come on, Paul.
Not too regional, am I?
No. It's nothing of the sort.
Next letter.
Look, I can mention your name to someone if
Julie Secord, byline at the Times. Let's see. Here's a letter from a listener up in Shawanahanthus. Does everything around here sound like it came from a Dr. Seuss book?
Oh, now that's offensive.
No, I mean, come on. Lake Tuskegee, Shawanahanthus.
The Tuskegee and the Chippewani are First Nations groups. Many of the place names in the area are their languages. Shawanahanthus is a Tuskegean word.
A word?
Well, I believe the translation is large, deep lake.
Oh, I guess, eh? Anyway, Shirley Warren from Shawanahanthus writes, Dear Frank, I suppose it's not too presumptuous of me to say Dear Paul, is it? People must have sent these letters in before they discovered Frank's indiscretion.
I bet many people think you're Frank.
You mean they don't listen to the show?
Well, for most folks, it serves as a backdrop, Paul. This isn't foreground radio.
It was not always thus. You know, people had attention spans. They were engrossed with the back and forth of ideas and the interplay of personalities. Mm. They imagined themselves as part of the world they heard. They became invested in it.
Paul.
What?
The letter.
Oh, right. Dear Frank, I can't believe what they're saying about you. Honey, look, if you ever need a place
to... Oh, I'm sorry. We can't read that one on the air after all.
You got one there, Julie?
Yes. Here's a letter from Maplewood. Have you been yet, Paul?
I don't know.
Oh, it's beautiful. They have the Lily Festival. Muriel Nelson of Maplewood writes...
I understand that Paul, who is doing a great job, by the way...
Says that.
Right here, who is doing a great job, by the way, is living in a cottage on Lake Tuskegee. I am, Muriel, directly on the water. And she continues... I'm wondering if he's seen Tusky, our lake monster, yet. I've never put much faith in the story until one day, 5 years ago, we spotted him. I have included a videotape we took at the time. It's not great quality. Jerry is no cameraman. Jerry must be your husband. But I don't think there is any mistaking what you're looking at.
Listeners at home should note that Paul is making a face. Skeptical, are we?
Well, no offense to Muriel. I am grateful to have my first fan in these parts. However, that monster swims not in the lake, but in your subconscious, Muriel.
I thought you would say something like that.
Getting to know me?
Yeah, I guess I am. You're given to hyperbole.
Well, how else to explain the presence of shy monsters in murky lakes the world over? Loch Ness, Ogopogo, Champ. It is the darkness within. That reptilian presence traveling the depths is us.
We should look at the tape. Needs to be rewound.
How television.
Well, you might be right. I mean, the monster thing could be a primitive, old brain pattern memory, you know, a fear of large reptiles that threatened our ancient ape cousins.
That kind of loose evolutionary talk would land a girl in trouble up here, Julie.
And then, you know, I suppose there is the possibility that they exist, like deep water prehistoric beasts that somehow, you know, became trapped or isolated, like during an ice age, by some geological, like in Lake Nicaragua, you know, they have freshwater sharks, again,
No. The only thing prehistoric is the human imagination itself. The monster is living, yes, I'll give you that, a living archetype of evil, of threat, or menace. It's no accident that
we're... Here we go.
Oh, hey. That's not a bad picture. Muriel was being hard on you, Jerry. It's nice photography, actually.
Beautiful day on the lake.
I'd love to get a boat like that one, just for putting around. Oh, look. That's where I'm staying. That's the place. The white clapboard, the yellow trim. This must be it coming up. Now I'm getting dizzy.
It's like that Michael Snow film.
Whoa. Focus, Jerry. Focus. Come on.
Oh, there it is.
What? I can't make anything out.
Oh, well, it's obviously a log or a...
Holy mother. Look. Look.
What?
There. There. It's Nick. It's got a long neck.
No, that's...
Jesus, Murphy, look, it's blowing water out of his nostrils.
No, it's a log.
Look at the fluke on that thing. It must be 15 meters long.
How can you tell? There's nothing
it's
to judge
huge.
The scale.
What must it eat to sustain such a mass? Surely it can't subsist on lake fish alone.
Royal Timber deforested the area years ago. There's hundreds of these big logs in the water. There's a name for them.
It's diving.
It's sinking.
Is it amphibious, you think?
It's a tree trunk.
That's what's happened to all those dogs.
Right. Thanks for the tape, Muriel, and if it's all right with you, I'll put your video up on our website. The address is www.cbc.ca/sunnydays.
And there, listeners can judge for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll agree there's something monstrous going on in Lake Tuscarawas.
The Sounds of Summer. On CBNR, 1770, in Butterton.
A letter from Verna Bannister of Bergton, just up the road, who writes, "When Ronald Reagan died recently, there was a news special on television about his life. In a segment dealing with the Iran-Contra affair, they played videotape of Admiral John Poindexter testifying before the House committee. I could have sworn he mentioned the name Paul Moth. It's such an unusual name that it stuck with me. Was I hearing things?"
The Admiral really was a Poindexter, let me tell you.
So, some kind of mistake.
Wow. Oh, man, the 80s. I was in Mexico trying to finance a film. I became aware of a source of Nicaraguan venture capital. I'm no rube, you know, and I have to confess that I suspected a laundering scheme. But, and I think anyone who's tried to finance a film will confess the same, I was willing to take money from anybody. Did I know this was part of the arms for hostages thing? No. Though when I had to travel to Tehran, anyway, that's how I came to have a very tangential involvement in the affair.
How old are you, Paul?
An interesting sidebar, though. While I was in Iran, I was out one night having coffee with some guys from VIVAC.
VIVAC?
Yeah, Iranian intelligence. Anyway, they're complaining, you know, that Mossad has guys in Washington, not in the White House or anything, but on the periphery. This was Wolfowitz and Pearl and those losers. And anyway, I say, sure, get your own man in there. And they laughed about it, and they say, yeah, like who? And just then, Ahmad Shalabi, who is like one of their agents, walks in, and I say, you know, what about Ahmad? So.
Oh, wait. This is the guy that the Americans were promoting as the...
As the head of the Iraqi National Congress, yeah.
Which you are saying was a front.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a front for the Americans.
Yeah, so did the Americans. That's the beauty of it.
Okay, Ahmad Shalabi was a mole for Iranian intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranians duped the Americans into invading Iraq for them?
Right. Then with the Shia majority, the Iranians grab all the Iraqi oil. I don't know what they're teaching you in J school, Julie, but I think that's pretty clear to everyone by now. To set the record straight here, I should tell the audience what I told my interrogators. I did not support the Iranian Revolution, the Nicaraguan Revolution, the Nicaraguan Counter-Revolution, the Reagan Revolution, Revolutions 1 or 9. I was just trying to make a movie.
Did you?
You got a VCR at home, Julie?
A DVD.
Sad. I only have a 35mm print in Mom's basement and a Betamax copy back at the house.
We're out of time, Paul. That's the last letter for today.
I was just getting into it. Crack's done.
We have a monster web presence of which listeners can partake. www.cbc.ca/sunnydays.
And if you'd like to drop us a line, our email address is sunnydays@cbc.ca. Or write us, care of the CBC, P.O. Box 500, Station A, Toronto, Ontario, M5W1E6. Next week, I'm off to the center of the country. Yes, look out, Toronto. Sunny Days and Nights is coming at you. From the fabulous Hundred Lakes, for Julie C. Cord, I'm Paul Moth. Until next Saturday at 11:30 in Newfoundland, we'll be seeing you.
This is CBC Radio.